Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Declarations of War. How you doing? Your host for this evening, myself, Alexei of Card, the one and only Ninja Turtle.
Hello.
And Kingblade.
Yo, yo, yo.
Who does not get any adjectives, modifiers, or any other accolades. It's just him.
Yeah, you know. Nobody loves me.
Yeah. Oh, Kingblade, if only someone loved you like that.
I'll put your time in.
All right, some shout-outs. Arcantantix Carpe Noctem, one of the directors in Noir, he has really busted his ass in recruiting for Noir and for the Alliance recently, so I want to give him a big thanks.
I got like a year's worth of shout-outs. Big shout-out to Arcmina and Shiny for hosting both friends and strangers alike at their biannual Goon Meet up in Madison. Ice Swarm was a ton of fun. Big shout-out to HVAC Repairman. Thanks for inviting me. Zach and Schwanuts, Doc, Watts, Bromander, Doink. Everyone that came out, it was a fucking blast. So much fun. Big apology to all the guys that met in Milwaukee last night, Saturday night. Sorry I couldn't meet you out. Fucked up my schedule. And one last note of hype. If you're going to FanFest, I'm doing a player presentation Saturday afternoon at 3. Serenity. Come watch.
And, well, as usual, my shout-outs go to everyone who's been shooting things, blowing things up, and buying my stuff off the market. Thank you all. Continue to shoot, blow up, and kill each other.
Always a good plan. Allie Arras, rest in peace. Nah, she's in Iceland now, I believe.
Rip.
I will get Allie back on the show at some point, I hope. If not, we'll clone her. Work for Jurassic Park, work for us. Our sponsor, Eve Timecode, EveTimecode.com, where your business counts. Get a free Plex for every $250 you spend there. And you can spend bitcoins. So if you decided to like get ahead of the wave and invested huge in bitcoins and have been disappointed with your investment, why not invest in a new Titan for yourself? No better time. It's EveTimecode.com. Boy, speaking of Titans and 00 in general, we have like a ton of news. We don't really have a ton of news. We have like three okay stories and then one huge story, which every podcast in the entire EVE universe has been talking to death. So it's our turn. but first, let's warm up. One of the most hilarious EVE spying stories ever happened recently. Brave and rest of the Hero Co. had a few systems unceremoniously drop their SOV, and they found out it was due to a director-level spy in one of the fleets that they were taking to reclaim said space. It was revealed that the FC's girlfriend is in fact a Pandemic Legion spy. The link will be in the show notes. It's definitely some can't-miss EVE audio, just hilarious. Check it out if you haven't. On the other end of space, Mini Love has been robbed. A bitter goon defector took about 250 billion worth of stuff from Goon Swarm. Now we're presuming it's Mini Love because a lot of the ships that were pictured in the evidence photo were gank related. Talking Catalysts, Taluses, that kind of thing. That's a pretty large sum to have lifted. We don't see here too many like robbed goons type stories come out. So I thought it was a bit noteworthy. I'm sure it happens, but it doesn't seem to get a lot of news when people steal from Goonswarm. And now on to the big stuff. We are finally getting the new SOV system. It's happening. It's real. There are numbers. But posts. Dev vlogs. Dev vlogs with numbers in them. Posts about the dev vlogs. Overall, my initial read, I'm pretty happy with it. Turtle, your thoughts?
Pretty good. Need to see some numbers tweaked. But the ideas are pretty solid.
What numbers do you need to see tweaked? What are you not pleased with?
The range disparity seemed really weird. Whatever it was, like 25k for a Tech 1 and then like 250k for a Tech 2. And to be honest, I don't think Capital should be able to use the modules at all, but that's just me.
King?
No, I agree with Turtle. I don't think Caps should be able to use the module. I like it being the idea that it's a sub-cap item. It's gonna force better fights.
Now, if you've been living under a rock, and you haven't heard about this at all, we are getting a new system. Structure grinds are going to be a thing of the past. There's a new module called an Entosis Link. You're going to fit it to your ship. It's going to disable your ability to warp off and get any kind of remote assistance while it's active. But when it is active, it interacts with all the SAV stuff, either putting it into Reinforced or turning it on for you, that sort of thing. Now, this is different from current in that it doesn't matter how many Entosis Links you have, one is all you need. So the key thing is going to be getting military control of the system, or at least the grid. And that's about it. You don't need to worry about bringing X numbers of supercarriers to grind the thing before you want to claw your eyes out, or anything of that. Some potential downsides. You can only activate this link within a certain range. And as Turtle touched on, the range is pretty weird. It's like 15 kilometers or something for the short range, and then for the 25 kilometers for Tech 1. But then for no inexplicable reason, you get 250 kilometers for Tech 2. Like a 10x range increase. I don't know why anyone would use Tech 1 for anything. It just doesn't seem to make tons of sense.
They're not cheap either. Like 20 mil and 80 mil respectively.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty reasonable. I mean, I guess it will really depend on how much fitting you're going to have to sacrifice besides a high slot. It's going to be a significant drain on power grid or CPU.
But I imagine you'll just low fitting requirements, it says, is the qualification, so I'm assuming not much.
And, you know, it also could be a typo on behalf of CCP about the range.
No, not a
range.
Typo. They have
really?
Confirmed.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah,
really? 25 and then 250, that just makes no sense.
That's something they said that they're going to take a look at.
You have to have the thing locked, right? So it's like, whatever you're locking with has to have a lock range. So 200, there's not a lot of ships that can lock out to 250, like, and do stuff, and still do stuff sensibly.
Well, that's the thing. Do you really need to do just stuff sensibly if you're the Entosis Link boat? You probably just need to lock and tank really hard. There are a couple ships that can do that. Of course, tanking really hard is the operative phrase right there, because once you turn it on, you can't get any reps. So you either have to have a beast local tank or enough EHP to last until your Entosis Link turns off, which is like, 5-10 minutes? It's pretty long. And as Turtle mentioned and Kingblade touched on, capital ships will be able to fit this, however, it will greatly increase the cycle time up to 10 minutes for a T2 Entosis Link. Now, it says increased by 400%, so I think you could assume that it's 2.5 minutes for a non-capital ship to do, which isn't that long, I guess. But definitely long enough for yourself to get toasted, though. You're not getting any remote assistance.
Yeah, 2.5 minutes is a long time with no reps.
Like, so Hex feels forever when you have to turn your point off, and that's what, 30 seconds?
I'm curious if you can use it like say a Marauder in Bastion mode, could you still use an Entosis Link?
I believe it's confirmed, yes you can.
Because that's not really hard to make a 2.5 minute active tank on a Bastion Marauder, so...
Yeah, but, I mean, again, you're sort of capped by what you could possibly wrap locally. You know what I mean?
That's true for anything, so, I mean, like...
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think we're actually going to see too many, like, on-grid Entosis fights, except in maybe some extreme circumstances. It'll probably be, like, after-the-fact type stuff. That'd be my guess, anyway. Some other changes. There will be prime times in which things can be reinforced. These are specific 4-hour windows that you set, and that's the only time to which your stuff can be put into reinforced and when it comes out of reinforced. I think this is probably the most controversial aspect of the thing, in general, because it sort of puts in a bit of a time zone freeze. Like, if you're a European alliance and you take space, there's, like, no chance that a non-European alliance is going to be able to take it away from you.
And there's no chance you're ever going to be able to take something that doesn't already belong to a European alliance anyways. So, rip a UTZ.
Or at least some TZs in some areas. Like, I'm unclear as to, like, if a time zone already becomes established in one part of space, how exactly that space ever even changes. Because really it'd be switching from one, say, American time zone to another American time zone alliance, and so on and so forth. Like, how would you dislocate an alliance like that and change things up? I don't really understand, aside from total internal fail cascade.
That or alarm just a massive amount of alarm clock ops. Just, I don't know. I agree. I think the window should be extended to 12-hour windows. You know, don't make it a full, you know, still keep it to a window, but if you extend it to 12 hours, I think that would create enough of a space where if you, you know, with the link, you should be able to get some nice time zone crossover.
The only difference, the only opening that these alliances have is that station services are going to be operating on a slightly different set of rules. They can be reinforced at any time, and it's a lot quicker to do so. So I think a non-time zone alliance could do lots of disruption to, you know, a given alliance outside of their prime time window, but I mean, it's still pretty dicey, and again, you can't actually take the system that way. CCP's got to do something about this. I know it's been raised on a podcast with CCP Fozzie, but I don't think they have a truly satisfying answer yet. As for the actual, it comes out of reinforced, now what do we do? There are going to be a series of nodes distributed throughout the constellation that need to be captured in order to take control of the actual structure itself. This is explicitly designed to spread fights out to multiple systems so as to make things a little easier on the EVE servers.
It's probably the most important change, like, out of all of them, to be honest.
Yep. Well, yeah.
Yeah, decentralizing that sub fight, for sure.
I mean, Intestis Link is a pretty big change, like, taking
yeah,
it away. They could have easily done, like, okay, you have to grind 50 structures all over the constellation, and it would have not changed tons. But I think the two changes hand in hand do change a lot. And the number of nodes that you need to capture are going to be depending on the level of defender bonuses, which is tied to activity, and the level of active resistance from the actual defending force. You know, if they go out and also capture nodes, then you're going to have to capture more nodes, of course. I'm pretty pumped. I guess the only other thing that needs to be talked about is
SBUs are being removed, station freeporting.
Yeah, the freeporting, which seems strange to me. But yeah, stations that, they're the only thing that has two reinforcement timers. And for the second timer, they get a freeport status where anyone can dock.
That's kind of cool.
Get it.
I do, because like, usually you would have to, as the aggressor, you'd have to like either keep up a fleet like 24/7, right, to hell camp it, or you'd have to like leave and go home because you can't dock there. But now you can kind of like do both, and like you both parties can now interact with that station. It's kind of cool. I like it, being able to like siege a station, I guess, and then dock.
And I guess, but would you really trust it to dock there in the first place? Like, it seems a little unrealistic.
Well, I mean, like, it's not like gonna eat you. Like, what are you talking about?
Well, I mean, you can get camped in super easy. If you don't actually win the next time, or like, what's your ship just stuck there now? King, what do you think?
Well, actually, I like the idea of it freeporting. Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Alec, where if you lose the second timer fight, you know, you have to be worried about camp being camped in, but I think it provides it provides value to the attacker, where they actually have the carrot. You know, it's one of those, you know, carrot in the stick situations where you fought the battle, won, you ground the structure. It's now flipped to your, you know, for the first timer, it's flipped to yours, now it's entered Freeport, so now you've got the benefit, or the benefit of the hard work, you know, something that you could say, yeah, we did it. Let's dock in our brand new station while we hell camp the shit out of it. And then, you know, then you can log off for a little bit, grab a sandwich. You don't have to worry about where to safe up, things like that. I don't know. It just seems like a nice little bonus for winning the fight.
It very much seems like a capitulation to the aggressor. Those changes where, like, the prime time changes are very, very, very much set towards the defender. The aggressor is actually, from the old system to the new, the aggressor is actually taking quite a bit of hit in how they actually have to go after Sov now. So, like, this kind of feels like capitulating a little bit to the aggressor and giving them a little bit of something in the new system.
I suppose.
No,
there's
I'm
also
right.
Some new dashboards and stuff coming our way to help make sense of this in a like a real sense. I'm sure there's going to be lots of third-party tools as well, but it's like for the most part CCP is determined to at least make it some kind of interaction with the actual map. A lot of the things that they linked were works in progress, but you can see sort of another take at the sovereignty overview slash dashboard that currently exists, as well as what looks like something of an integration with a larger EVE map with various Sov fights sort of graphically represented there with different icons. That could be cool. And the other thing to note is that Industrial Index is actually going to contribute to defensive bonuses. So we're still going to have three indexes. The Military Index, which is tied to ratting, and still will be, I presume. The Industrial Index, which I presume will still be tied to mining, although perhaps it'll be expanded. I hope so. Really, it should count any kind of industrial activity. And just like Military Index should also include PvPing. In my view. And the strategic index, which is being deprioritized. It used to be like the main thing. If you had strat level 5, you could unlock all these defensive modules. Now it's, you know, it's just a tiny multiplier. It's not nearly as much as the other two. And they stack. So if you have military 5, industrial 5, and strategic 5, you get an occupancy bonus of 4, which 4x's the time it takes to do anything. In terms of attackers. So instead of 10 minutes, it's 40 minutes, that kind of thing. Which is a pretty significant advantage, it seems, because a lot of this, it seems to me like it's going to be tied to reaction time, with all these distributed nodes, and, you know, people being able to attack you, all these different structures everywhere. Like, if you want to respond to them, you're going to have to get a force out and go actually do it. And to do that, you need time. So now you get like 10 minutes to form up versus 40 minutes to form up. Obviously, 40 minutes to form up is way better. And the other tiny little nugget that they dropped is that the Alliance logo will be visible in the system, like right on in your Neocom where it says like the system, where your autopilot goes and all that stuff. You'll actually be able to see the icons of who owns that system. You're not going to have to go to the TCU for that, which I think is pretty awesome. Definitely makes your Alliance logo a little cooler, makes the who owns the system feel a little bit more tangible. Obviously more can be done there in terms of actual in-game tangible things, but at least this is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I like the little, it's a nice little touch that they've added.
Alright, so end of the day, what is your verdict, Turtle?
80%.
Alright, so like a solid B-. King?
I'm gonna give them a B+. I like their thought process behind the changes to Sov. I think they're doing it in a really good way. I'm giving them a solid B+. I think it's really good. A few things I think they need to tweak, such as the vulnerability window. I think it needs to be a larger window so that they don't alienate time zones, or once time zones start holding specific areas of space, as we discussed earlier, it's it basically is going to be, this is the EU. If you're in EU time, you're going to go here to go fight. If you're in US Prime, you're going to go here to go fight. And then if you're in AU time zone, you're just SOL.
And that's like for smaller groups too. Like, I mean, bigger groups aren't really going to have to worry about that because there's no like split in their coverage. You have a US time zone, you have an EU time zone, maybe you have an AU time zone. Like, it's just really who has to do the work, I guess, now depends on where you're looking to take sovereignty. Small guys, it's going to get fucked. Like, corps that only have one time zone, yeah, this is where you fall into now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely going to be a bit of a challenge. I'd like to see CCP put some kind of mechanic out that addresses that. Maybe it's a thing that can switch that to the whatever the defender wants if the attacker doesn't do something about it, something like that. So I would give him a B plus, like an 89, 88. I think it'd be an A if they addressed either the time zone issue or the 00 economics issue, which I still don't think they've quite nailed. And if they addressed both of them, I would give it an A+. I really like the direction it's going. I'm excited to like wreak all kinds of havoc. I really think it's the mechanics, the distributed nature of it, really, really favors the use of mercenaries in EVE. So it's exciting to see 00 mercs potentially come back into their own. I definitely look forward to being hired quite frequently on these types of contracts.
Yeah.
Holla at your boy, people. The other change, which was touched on in the same interview that CCP Fozzy was giving about the time zone changes, it was on the Australian EVE radio show. Supercaps are going to get some kind of change. A little unclear as to what exactly is going to happen, but the hint dropped from Fozzy is that they're going to be moving away from a damage roll and into some kind of bonus providing thing, like wormhole level bonuses. I'm skeptical. Obviously, it'd be a little cool, but I think it's going to fall into the same trap as command ships and link boosting tech 3s fall into, which is, yes, you want them in your fleet, but you never want to be the guy that has to be in them. That's why you do it on alts that are just off-grid and sitting there instead of having them in your fleet doing things. Because just sitting there and giving boosts to people is boring. Like, no one wants to do that. They want to be active and participate and feel like they're having an impact more than just sitting there for an hour.
Yeah, well, so like, fly a command ship, don't fly like a T3 booster, right? Like a command ship that can actually be on a fight and do shit. Like, I totally understand. I totally understand what you're saying. Well, yeah, but that's like not a fault in the design. Like, I mean, that's just what people do. People have alts with command links that are, you know, T3s, cloaky T3s or whatever, and it's just like.
And my apologies, by the way, it wasn't on EVE Radio. It was the EVE Down Under podcast. I stand corrected.
But, I mean, that's really one of the two ways you're running links. You're either going to be burying them in a safe spot, at which point you're probably using a T3, or you're on-grid doing shit, which you're using a command ship. I mean, that's just that's what the design of it is.
I think it presents a unique idea of what they're trying to accomplish. I just think that it's going to fail to hit on the point where, what about everyone that owns a super cap? I mean, if you're going to create this super cap that's going to be moving away from a damage roll bonus, you're not going to need the proliferation of super caps as you have them now. You're going to need one Titan on the field. You're going to need one, one super carrier on field, because you're not. I don't know what the stacking mechanics of the bonuses are going to be. He hasn't given any real concrete stuff, but based on the. Based on what I've read and the feedback that I've seen from other people and speculation and my own tinfoil hatting myself, you're really going to kind of alienate a very large populace of people who have spent a very long time trying to acquire that super capital for, you know, whatever reason, either, you know, to help support the Alliance by being a super pilot or to attain that little carrot that you've set for yourself of having a super capital, basically just to turn it into something that you can't dock and spin because it's about as useful as an Ibis, to be frank.
So, yeah, you don't worry about, like, alienating people, because people will, you know, whatever, sell their super, sell their character, like, just fly a carrier instead. But, like,
who's
okay,
buy it, though?
I mean, I guess that might be a good point. But basically what you're doing is you're taking a fleet of 100 people and then, like, replacing 80 of those people and putting them in command ships instead. Like, it's overkill. Like, unless that super is doing something else, I mean, alliances that have supers in the numbers of hundreds or in thousands, like, it's what do you do with all those? You have to be able to turn those into something other than just command ships or whatever.
And that's exactly my point. If you turn them all into command ships, you're not going to be able to, one, offload the inventory. It's, I mean, just simple supply and demand. Every alliance, you know, every fleet's going to need to have, what, one, maybe two. You're going to need a couple of backups, but then you're talking about some alliances that have, let's say, 300 or 400 of these things, maybe 1,000 of these things laying around. There's not going to be smaller alliances that need to buy 30 of them anymore. You're talking about killing an entire segment of industrialists and their way of life. I mean, it just doesn't sit right. Being an industrialist myself, I don't build super capitals. I don't build components. I stay sub cap only. But I do know people that do produce super capitals, and they produce, you know, a fairly decent number of them per year and sell them to the big alliances. And I can tell you that they're very worried. They're extremely worried because you're basically taking, you know, what they do for their livelihood away from them, because you're basically making the ship useless. I mean,
possibly.
Okay,
so if you imagine it, rather than in a command ship level where you're giving, one ship is giving bonuses across many ships, think of, like, maybe what if a supercarrier, instead of, like, the next step up from a carrier, was, like, the carrier's support instead of, you know, on the same level as opposed to, like, stepping up a level. And that support exists not at a 1-to-fleet ratio, but at a 1-to-1 or a 1-to-2 kind of ratio. So, the realistic fact is you can take supercarriers out of the game, but you're not going to change the fact that, like, carrier warfare is still here, right? You've taken away the hit point grinds of structure Sov, and that's really cool. But there's a lot of elements of PvP that, you know, are still more or less time/hit point grinds. So you take that idea of support, but put it at the ratio of 1-to-1, 1-to-2, instead of like 1-to-300 people in the fleet, and you wouldn't really lose the benefit of having more of them, because I mean, carrier warfare is still what it is at this point.
No, I hear what you're saying, and I'm hoping that's what they do. But again, they've given us nothing really solid. They've given us no really kind of idea of what they're iterating on.
Yeah,
you know, sure. other than we want to take the combat out of the super. So it's like, okay, you want to take the one thing that they do away from them.
Well, and they do it, but they do it well because of mostly because of structure grinds, to be honest. I mean,
oh yeah.
Like, no, so no, imagine that. Now if having a super on field meant that your dreadnought could tank, like, that kind of idea of logistics, like, then, yeah, people would be all over having super still. Like, using it instead of just the next step up in damage between carrier and titan, like, make it what actually supports its lower cousins in the capital and dreadnought classes.
Yeah.
Not like a logistics, but something.
Yeah, just by reading what the conversation, by what I've read and everything, it just seems like I guess I get the sense that Fozzy was looking for it to become more of a command and control type vessel and less of a combat vessel, which is what scares me, because if he makes it a command and control type vessel where he's giving bonuses and maybe providing fleet-wide, you know, a fleet-wide bonus, you know, with a wormhole type thing using a super capital module that, you know, gives a bonus to tracking or gives a bonus to armor, and it gives it to his side so that it can increase. You know, my question is, how many of these modules can I fit? And two, how many of these ships do I need to be able to stay effective through, let's say, a two or three, four hour fight? That's where I'm going based on the way that I read the conversation and some of the things that I've, you know, tinfoil hatting it. That's just what it felt like the way that I was reading it. I didn't listen to the actual thing. I just read transcripts, but that's kind of the way I felt that Fozzie was going with the little bit he did give.
The other thing, potential note, is that there's talk. CCP Fozzie dropped the hint. Possibly removing instant local from 00. Fucking finally.
Oh, that is something that makes me so happy.
This is also something that's producing a shit ton of rage on the forums.
Of course it is, because then you can't take your carrier into out of the POS shield, assign fighters and go run a level 10 DED complex with your Bastion fit golem.
True.
Poor babies. You poor babies.
You just couldn't do it as safely.
No, I agree. And that's what they're complaining about.
Did he say how much of a delay?
No, but it could range from anything from 30 seconds to wormhole, where you don't show up ever.
Infinite. Thanks, guys.
I don't think it'll be infinite. If I had to put a number on it, I would say that it would be 30 to 45 seconds, maybe a minute.
30 seconds seems like a pretty legit number. I mean, to be honest, like, that gives you, as somebody jumping in, maybe trying to hunt somebody down on D-scan, a decent advantage, like, enough of an advantage.
Yeah. I mean, anything is better than what we have now, right? I would like to see if they make a significant change to 00 local, some kind of better way to handle intel in EVE than currently is. Like, intel channels are great, but they're really player patchwork for something that CCP should be doing a lot more effectively. Hell, even, being able to figure out what's around your ship, D-scan isn't super engaging as a mechanic. And, just sitting there smashing the button every 1 or 2 seconds so you can minor rat in peace isn't cool. Like, it should be something that feeds you that information, and then you maybe have to interpret it or invest in better sensors to get more detailed data, that kind of stuff.
Well,
if you're
going
to take away local, you have to replace it with something.
Yeah,
probably.
That's the whole point, is, like, the chat part of it needs to go away, because it's just stupid. Like, it really, honestly, serves very little purpose in the game. Figure out some other way, but separate the list of people that are actually in system from the chat if you need to, and then look at that, how you actually display that list of people. Because that's a pretty integral part of the game. Like, getting rid of that isn't really, like, a minor decision. I mean, to you think about, NullSec not having local, I mean, and the scale of fights that go on there, and then not really being able to judge, like, when you have people in the thousands in system and not really being able to count that. I don't know. There's a lot of implications there of not being able to see it at all. So I hope it's a finite amount of time.
Well, I definitely think it's going to be a finite amount of time. One thing I'd like to see, something that I've sent before as a pitch, was having something that was proximity to your ship. Let's say within 7 AUs, you would then pop up on local. So, again, I don't think your sensor, I know that this is a game, but I think that if you tied it more into proximity to the ship gave you a more clear idea of what was in local, I think that would be fair. So if you're in the middle of a belt, 40 AUs, you shouldn't be able to see the person that jumps in. But, when that ship is hunting you down and gets within, 7 or 8 AUs, it still gives you an opportunity to say, hey, your local just jumped by one because something has gotten close enough to you proximity-wise. And then you make the decision on whether to either A, if you're paying attention, and then react to it how you see fit, either just ignoring it or, warping off at that point.
I have a feeling that would make it, like, even easier to bot, to be honest. Because then all you really do as a bot program is leave anytime something comes up on local, still.
No, I know.
Again, like, it's an even better indication.
It's not a foolproof plan. Bots are going to exist, unfortunately, in every video game. I was going more for the idea of when you're not catching bots and you're actually catching people ratting who are legitimately out there ratting for the PvP. I think it's beneficial for the hunter and it gives the person being hunted a chance to, if they're paying attention, gives them a chance to get out of there.
All in all, I think it'd be a positive change. But, I mean, there's an opportunity for them to make it a positive change and turn it into an awesome change. Just hope they take that opportunity. But, yeah, that's the new SOP system. Sort of a TLDR version, I guess, but a lot more details are coming on each of the specific parts that we've talked about. And I'm sure you will get all of those details as they come. Like, it's definitely going to be something we're going to be watching extremely closely. CCP is looking for feedback on these changes, so by all means, hit the forums, check out the threads, see what's been talked about, add your 2 cents. Bringing it from the galactic-wide look at EVE Online, just down to our little corner of it, a little update on No Not Believing. We have taken our first contracts as an alliance. We took 2 small contracts, you know, nothing huge. We cleaned a wormhole out of Pokos, like about 7 of them. We also saved a tower from an attacking force. Both contracts went without a hitch, and were pretty damn good. Turnout, especially, I want to credit my guys for turning out the wormhole, or excuse me, the post save one. We wound up taking that job with not much notice at all. It was like 10, 12 hours, something like that. It was very rapid deployment. So, major props. We had a huge turnout compared to what I thought we would have, and the tower was successfully saved. Speaking of saving towers, Propiblock decided to reinforce one of ours in our home system of Karim, and promptly got popped in the mouth. Our POS gunners claimed a few of their fleet on the attack, and then when they decided to come back in and kill it, they got their priorities mixed up a little bit. You know, we had our tower there, and I guess they figured, oh, we'll get to that whenever, and they started reinforcing another one on the same planet. I don't know why. So we reshift and warped on grid thinking they were about to hit our tower. When they didn't show up, we found where they were on D-scan and warped on top of them. Now, why they didn't warp off after they saw us on D-scan, I don't know. Why they didn't take advantage of the Ishtar's superior maneuverability to get the fuck out of there when we landed on top of them, I don't know. But we landed on top of them with the Zealot fleet and promptly shredded a lot of them. It was a pretty epic fight. Entirely one-sided. We lost 2 Zealots, 1 to a grid-foo-style situation where he was on grid with no logis for some reason, and the other pilot had recently installed an EVE client and didn't set his shortcuts, so none of his armor broadcasts got delivered. Aside from that...
Oops.
Yeah, a bit of an oops there. Aside from that, no problems. We killed like half a dozen Ishtars and Vexor Navy issues. It was pretty freaking great. And then we went back, repaired the tower. No fuss. So yeah, Propiblock, bring it, bras. We're here. We're not leaving. We also have a few corps and even an alliance thinking of merging into No Not Believing. And we would appreciate... I think we're looking for, at this point, an Australian corp and a European corp of considerable size. Whichever one of those we fill first, great. Ideally, we'd get both of them in the next couple months. If you happen to be an Australian or European time zone corp, primarily, that you're really interested in PvP and are looking for a great alliance culture with some awesome infrastructure and IT tools to play around with, and you would love to get in on this causing lots of havoc in the new SOV system ride, tickets are on sale now. Contact Alexei of Card in the game. And tell me a bit about yourself. Tell me who you are, how many guys you've got, what kind of PvP you like, and we'll start that conversation. Speaking of mercs around the world. And this week at Mercs, we have continuation of the mercenary fanfiction saga of Gevly Goblin and the Empire Mercs. So, if you did not read previous installments of this series, you have Gevly Goblin scamming Noir out of money. Then you had Gevly Goblin and Tor Bushido, which used to be his stalwart ally that he basically could count on to do anything for no money, or at least very little money. Apparently Tor got sick of that, got tired of Gevlin Goblin constantly putting him and his guys down, constantly exploiting basically their free effort to do stuff, and then like any successes they had from that, he would just claim them as his own on his blog. Would never really give him the money, would never really give him the credit. So finally he had enough, and now they had a falling out. Sure enough, good old Gevlin, looking for more mercs to do his bidding, contacts Seraph 9 Basrav, who we've discussed on the show quite a bit. Seraph was one of Gevlin's staunch allies, never did work directly for him, but you know, always gave him favorable press in the media, was quick to defend him on a forum post. Gevlin turns to him and, you know, basically says, "Hey, I want you to do work for free for me." And Seraph goes, "Well, I don't want to do that. I would like this much money." Gevlin goes, "No, that's ridiculous." Seraph goes, "But I mean, I could easily just turn to the goons and take that much money to go fight you. I mean, why wouldn't you pay like the minuscule amount of isk that I'm asking you for?" Goblin was like, "You're threatening to join the goons? Let me run to my blog." And now they have a falling out. And thus, I believe Gevlin Goblin has literally two friends in the entire universe. A blogger, who I can't remember the name of, and a CEO in Mortis Angels, who I also can't remember the name of. So good job, Gevlin.
And because we don't know can't remember their names, that shows you how meaningful those relationships are.
Yes. It is not the CEO of Mortis Angels, I'll tell you that much. So basically, I don't know if do you guys want to put any wagers on which one of those two Gevlin is going to piss off next? Because it seems to be his pattern. Like, find a friend and then do whatever it would possibly take to burn that bridge.
I say it's Mordus.
Yeah, that's my lean to as well. It'll take some time, but it'll happen. Turtle?
Why would I ever care about this, dude?
Yeah, that's a good point. I just think it's a little funny.
He's a fucking idiot. Like, they're both idiots. I mean, I've dealt with Seraph enough in my time. It's no, like, fucking cesspool of retardation that whatever they're doing is. Like, I just don't want any part of it.
It's kind of interesting to watch from the bleachers, though. I'll definitely be keeping an eye on it, just for sheer schadenfreude. Alright, guys. EveBet.com. Eve-bet.com. New Eden's premier betting service. You can bet on real-life sports, UFC, all that kind of stuff with ISK. You can also bet on Eve stuff, of course. The Alliance Tournament, which I assume will be announced pretty soon. You can definitely get in on that. And a whole bunch of other events. They've handled hundreds of trillions of ISK since opening, so they're definitely a service you can trust. They've also got other games like blackjack, slots, and that kind of thing. With more stuff being added every week, you're probably going to find something that catches your fancy. Just don't bet on the LCS. Shit's crazy this year. EveBet.com. www.eve-bet.com.
But I would definitely bet on March Madness. It's going to be great.
I've been betting on UFC mostly, and that's how I've been making my money.
Oh, nice.
What little of it I am making.
Just bet Kentucky every week. It pays.
Alright, guys. And with that, that is our show. Go to decorationsofwar.com to participate in the show poll, leave a comment, or put in a donation. Really appreciate it. You can reach Noir via our public channel, CafeNoir. Plan to join us on the forums at noirmerks.com. Again, we are interested in recruiting corps for our alliance. Get in on the ground floor of what will be the best mercenary alliance in EU's history. No, not believing. Good hunting, listeners.
Dagrabah. So my homies in Disney, both in the Magic Kingdom and in the other kingdoms. Whatever. Let's get it right. I can show you the world, a shining, shimmering, splendid. Tell me, princess, now when did you last let your heart decide? I can open your eyes, take you wonder by wonder. over sideways and under on a magic carpet ride, a whole new world. A new fantastic point of view, no one to tell us no or where to go or say we're only dreaming, a whole new world. A dazzling place I never knew, but when I'm way up here, it's crystal clear that now I'm in a whole new world with you. Unbelievable sights, indescribable feeling, soaring, tumbling, freewheeling through this endless diamond sky, a whole new world. 100,000 things begin, I'm like a shooting star, I've come so far, I can't go back, I'm in a whole new world. New horizons to pursue, I'll chase them anywhere there's time to spare. Let me share this whole new world with you. Yo, since this is a rap song, I guess I gotta drop the F-bomb, so fuck. Yo, I'm the greatest Disney rapper of all time. This is the new shit. You wanna front with me, you better bring your whole crew. I wanna give a mad shout out to Jafar and Iago for making this shit happen. You're my boys. Get up on Jasmine's fine ass, you know what I'm saying? Do dirty in the sand, princess style. Yo, I know what she likes.